Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Today, ISF CEO Steve Durbin and I discuss research he's been conducting since the fall of 2021 around the New World Order and the race for tech dominance. Today's episode is the first of two focusing on these themes. So, Steve, as I just said, you've been delving into some pretty dark and big topics in your research, and I'm curious why you're looking at those two subjects. Today, I want to start with what you mean by a new world order, because that's what sets the scene for the discussion of the race for tech dominance. But what's the purpose of this research overall? Why does this draw your interest?
Well, I think there's a few things, Tavia, really. It's probably worth just saying right at the outset here, because some of the listeners may well be in a similar position to you and sort of thinking, well, why is he talking about this? The primary driver is my view, and I think it's a commonly held view by others as well, that it's no longer possible to separate out what happens in cyber, in technology, from what goes on in the world, and indeed vice versa. The two are so now intertwined and interlinked. And so if you accept that premise, that sort of going forward position, then in order to better understand some of the impacts that cyber and security are going to have on the way in which we not just transact business, but in the way in which we live, then we need to have a better understanding, I think, of that context. And so that's really been the reason behind the work that I've been doing. And I've been doing it, you know, as a result as well of working with a number of business schools and boards and all around the world, where it's become increasingly obvious to me that we need to be setting that context and understanding that context. Because, you know, if you think about not just education, but the way in which companies work, the way that the boards tend to operate, it is all about trying to understand not just market landscape, but also upcoming actions that might impact what we're trying to do, how we're trying to do things, so that we can prepare for them, so that we can anticipate and prepare better. So that's really been the rationale behind it all.
Well, let's begin this New World Order topic. Tell me what you mean by that. What is the New World Order?
Sure. I mean, we've talked many times on this podcast over the last, 6 years now, about the fact that the world has been drastically and radically changed by technology. We've talked a lot about different emerging technologies, AI, for instance. And I know that during upcoming seasons this year, we're going to be getting into that in a little bit more detail too. But, you know, emerging technologies such as AI, 5G, of course, cloud computing, they're all increasing automation, efficiency, and accuracy. And technology continues to develop at a pace, continues to change at a really exponential rate. And importantly, its usage is also increasing at a similar sort of rate. So, you know, I'll give you an example. If we go back just to 2020, not that long ago, information was doubling every 73 days. Mm-hmm. And I remember you and I talking about that and saying, wow, you know, how do we deal with that? Well, let's roll it forward a little bit. And by 2025, we're going to be creating something like 463 zettabytes. Now, I had to look that up because that didn't mean anything to me. So it's the equivalent of nearly 213 million DVDs per day. So anybody listening to this who has a DVD collection, and I have one, if you just try and imagine, you know, how long it's taking you to pull all of that together, the space it takes up and so on. Anyway, the point is a very simple one. Usage is increasing. Information is growing at this exponential rate. And of course, that presents, yes, opportunity, but also challenge. So approaching all of that from a security perspective, we can see that, you know, deploying these sorts of advanced technologies will create global risks as data volumes and indeed usage, most importantly, perhaps, increase. And these risks include adverse outcomes of technological advances, breakdown of critical infrastructure, digital inequality, digital power concentration, and failure of cybersecurity measures and really failure of technology governance. And I touched on some of those as well towards the end of last year when I was talking about the emerging threats for 2022, mm-hmm. You'll remember. So it's really a continuing theme is the way that I would view it.
Each one of those topics could be its own podcast and probably will be at some point in the future. But today, let's delve more deeply into the three that you believe we're most likely to experience in the next decade. And those are digital power concentration, digital inequality, and cybersecurity failure. It seems to me that the first two, the power concentration and inequality, really go hand in hand. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd say so. So, you know, I'll start by defining the term so everybody knows what I'm actually talking about. Digital power concentration, that's the concentration of critical digital assets, capabilities, and knowledge by a reduced number of individuals, businesses, or states, which in turn can lead to things like discretionary pricing mechanisms, a lack of impartial oversight, unequal private or public access to what have become really digital necessities. So that's digital power concentration. Digital inequality is the fractured or the unequal access to critical digital networks and technology, both between and indeed within countries, as a result of unequal investment capabilities, perhaps, or lack of necessary skills in the workforce, perhaps insufficient purchase power, or government restrictions, or indeed cultural differences. So these growing digital divides and technology adoption pose very real concerns. Now, you know, COVID-19 has accelerated the fourth industrial revolution, expanding that digitalization of human interaction, e-commerce, online education, and remote work, because we had no other option. These shifts will transform society long after the pandemic has gone. And indeed, they promise pretty huge benefits, you know, things like the ability to telework, rapid vaccine development, which everybody is very grateful for, you know, just two examples. But they also risk exacerbating and creating inequalities. And this widening digital gap can worsen societal fractures and really undermine prospects for an inclusive recovery. So progress towards digital inclusivity is threatened by growing digital dependency, rapidly accelerating automation, information suppression and manipulation, gaps in technology regulation, and gaps in technology skills and capabilities.
So from what you're saying, these digital divides come in many forms.
Yeah, they do. And one form is automated bias that can be manipulated. So, you know, these days, decisions historically made by people, such as, I don't know, diagnosing health issues, for instance, or choosing investments, assessing educational achievements, resolving legal disputes, they're increasingly being made by sophisticated algorithms that apply machine learning to large data sets. So, as an example, in the United States, in the criminal justice system, algorithms are being used to predict the risk of reoffending. In the private sector, more businesses are turning to algorithmic management to track employee productivity. Now, automating those decisions deepens biases when they depend on black box algorithms that have been developed using skewed historical data sets. Digital content that's been manipulated by AI will, is the fear, be used to create hyper-realistic copies of individuals in real time.
So deepfakes.
Deepfakes. And we talked about that, I think, in one of our podcasts last year. I know that was one of your favorites.
Biggest fears.
But that's right. That's right. You know, digital communications as well are going to be undermined, and highly credible fake news will spread.
And then another guise under which digital divides appear would be access and regulatory gaps.
That's right, digital gaps. So the differential ability to access data and digital technologies, and they're widening between and indeed within countries. So if we look at internet usage, for instance, so internet usage ranges from more than 87% of the population in high-income countries to less than 17% in low-income countries. Within countries, you know, access to digital resources is stratified by socioeconomic status, even in those high-income countries. So an example would be vulnerable households during the pandemic having been forced to choose between how they're going to spend their money on food, on sustenance, or on connectivity. And the real challenge in here, and the real shame of it, I think, is that so much during the pandemic, the response to it has been so heavily dependent upon technology.
Right.
And so if you aren't able to connect, if you aren't able to follow through and find out how you can gain access to certain resources, that in turn has created massive problems. And we shouldn't be having to make those choices.
Right.
So, you know, fissures in digital equality as well are exacerbated by political and geopolitical incentives. So some governments, for instance, shut down internet access to control the flow of information and public discourse within and outside their borders, or specifically to exclude foreign-based platforms. And some people may be thinking immediately here of China, but we've also seen similar in Kazakhstan recently. And there are other things that have been happening in places like Ukraine, for instance.
It's so distressing to me, too, because the idea that one has to choose between food and connectivity when connectivity is directly related to the resources in order to provide things like food and shelter. It's a terrible situation.
Well, the digital divide is also, of course, created not just by your ability to pay, but your ability to understand and relate to technology.
Right.
And that as well, we have to be very careful about, because, of course, you can exclude large proportions of the population, either because they can't afford to get that access, as you're pointing out, or because they simply don't know how to use it or are afraid to use it. So if you look at senior citizens, for instance, a COVID pass will be a good example of that. You know, you have to download a COVID pass. The assumption is either that you have the technology and indeed capability to be able to do that, or that you can rely on somebody to help you do it. Those are premises that we are putting out there, assuming that the vast majority of the population will be able to comply or indeed will have access to. That's not necessarily the case. So we're then excluding a whole range of the population. And so I do think that when we think some of these things through, we need to be thinking not just about the impact of the way in which technology might help, but how we're also going to bridge the gap for those that don't have access to technology or would prefer not to access the technology. And that, for me, I think has been really exacerbated during the pandemic.
I was in line to get my booster shot a couple weeks ago, and a gentleman who clearly was experiencing housing insecurity was next to me in line and asked if he could get a booster and was told, you have to go online and make an appointment. And I thought, this person, just in looking at him, he had traveled there on his bicycle and he didn't have those resources. And he said, I'm not good with technology. And the pharmacist sort of shrugged and said, I can't help you. This is an example of a digital divide where he did not have the resources to own his own technology, nor did he apparently have the capacity to deal with technology, but there was no help for him.
Yeah, and that is really one of the big challenges, I think. And if you bring it right the way back to why would we be talking about that? Well, from a business standpoint, of course, it has implications as to how we go forward. A lot of the focus for boards around the world now is on giving back. It's on the social issues. You know, we've moved beyond green, if you see what I mean. You know, we used to talk about the environmental issues. We've moved beyond that. I think that's absolutely right. And so we do need to be considering some of these things. It also raises security questions, because if you were to have stepped in and did that on his behalf, now suddenly you're gaining access to a whole range of information that you probably shouldn't be having access to. And goodness knows what you might then do with it. And so, you know, I think that it's worth us just sort of stepping back sometimes when we look at these examples and thinking through some of the implications, not just for that particular situation, but more broadly speaking as well, as we try to come up with solutions from a business and security standpoint.
Yeah. The digital power concentration that you're talking about can lead to user disenfranchisement and also governance challenges, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at a time when a growing number of human activities, things that we do, are going digital, individuals and institutions face a heightened risk of losing their digital autonomy. You know, power is becoming very much more concentrated in certain markets. And I think the pandemic has shown that, certainly. But also things like online retail, online payments, communication services. Now, digital power concentration could confine political and societal discourse to a limited number of platforms that have the capability of filtering information and further reducing the already limited agency of individuals and organizations over how their data are used. This sort of very complicated coming together of digitally interconnected devices, super fast networks. Now, that's all going to prove to be a security concern as modern life becomes, unfortunately, some would say, entirely dependent upon technology. And that really is some of the things we've just been talking about, some of those examples there that we were considering. And that is going to bring about new dangers, while, of course, some of the existing ones that we do know about will also be potentially amplified.
Let's talk about the other threat that you think that we're quite likely to see in the next decade, cybersecurity failure. So we've been talking about COVID, and of course, since COVID, the cyber world has become a much riskier place, and it has exposed the public and private sectors to wide-scale cyber attacks. So it sounds like
business and government are both facing a perfect cyber storm, if you will.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, you're probably right.
Great.
COVID certainly did really fast forward business into a digital first world. That whole, you know, many, many organizations had digital transformation programs that they had planned to roll out, and we had to fast track them. Mm-hmm. As a result, you know, we've probably created greater cyber vulnerabilities along the way. And, you know, some examples, just to put that into context. So we know, for instance, from research that cyber attacks soared something like 300% during the pandemic. Mm. Remote working alone led to breaches in 20% of firms that were reporting the breaches. Mm-hmm. And that's an important piece as well, that, you know, it was being reported. Mm-hmm. Cybercrime is big business. I've often described it as an entrepreneurial growth business. It generates trillions of dollars in returns. And, you know, if it were a nation, it would be in the G10. So that, again, provides some context for what we're talking about. And cybercrime businesses are very much organized along similar lines as you would expect a large business to be. They do have CEOs. They have research and development. They have call centers.
Do they have health insurance, though, is really the question. Good benefits package.
Good benefits package, yeah. They probably have some other ways of motivating staff, yes, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
But, you know, add to that the fact that, you know, public and private sectors are speeding up digital innovation. And I think we will continue to adopt some of the ways that we were forced into working and living during the pandemic. What I mean by that is that people, you know, will shop more from home, will work more from home. And so all of the challenges that we talked about last year and indeed the year before, in some of our podcasts around, you know, needing to stay secure, they're all going to be increasingly relevant because cyber criminals are becoming smarter. Mm. They are becoming more proactive as well at being able to exploit mistakes, at being able to understand the linkage across supply chains and other areas of weakness. And I mentioned the public and the private sectors. Well, the sad reality is that we are all collectively, I think, falling behind due to insufficient cybersecurity talent, training, and investment. So not only are firms losing the cyber arms race, but their people are simply not ready either. Hmm. An example would be research that was recently done by IBM that said that human error was a major factor in 95% of breaches. Hmm. We've also got the CISO shortage that has reached new heights. So Ponemon Institute, for instance, reporting 3 million unfilled global cybersecurity jobs. So we've got all of these different things that are going on, technology expanding, cyber criminals becoming more competent, more effective at what they're doing. And at the same time, the good guys struggling to keep up. Mm.
Especially that level of unfilled jobs, 3 million. I mean, all of this is obviously a very serious problem.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and it isn't, I think the challenge with it isn't isolated. So it's not as if we're saying, okay, this is a West Coast of the United States problem or it's a Northern European problem. It's a global issue. At the same time, of course, businesses are operating very much more globally. So I think it is causing business leaders to really have to rethink how they go about not transacting business, but how they go about attracting, retaining, making sure that what they are doing is important, yes, but supported not just by some of the traditional elements of that sales, marketing, aftercare, but also through technology and through, therefore, security. Because security, well thought through from the outset, can really help in terms of protecting some of the competitive advantage that we're all going to continue to strive for. But we don't have enough people, so we have to be making things simple. Mm-hmm. Simplification is one of the watchwords, I think, that we're going to have to adopt very much more in security. We have to make use of technology where it's appropriate. So, you know, I'm a big fan of what machine learning certainly can do in terms of the more sort of mundane day-to-day mm-hmm. security roles. And it's about really stepping back, I think, and reviewing that whole strategy from the standpoint of we know that there are shortages. We know that we're going to have to change. So what is it that we've got to do to be more effective and to make better use of the resources that we've got? Hmm. So that's really what I mean when I talk about a new world order. The technology we've embraced, yes, has improved our lives in many ways, but it's also brought with it all of these challenges we've just been talking about. We've still got social inequality. We've still got crime. It's just that it's moved into a digital environment. And so we need to be smarter at how we deal with that and how we educate ourselves and the people that we work with and families, of course, into taking advantage, yes, of the opportunities, but also just being aware that we need to be perhaps a little bit more careful when we're using technology than traditionally we might have been.
Well, thank you for explaining the New World Order. Next week, we'll talk about the race for tech dominance. In the meantime, listeners, will you consider writing a short review of the ISF podcast? Reviews are a big support in helping us reach new listeners, so if you do have a moment, we would be very grateful for your time. Or just let Steve know that you enjoy the program. That's also meaningful to hear as well. You can find him on LinkedIn, or you can search on LinkedIn at Security Forum and reach out to us that way. If there's a topic or a question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, we welcome that information. Of course, you can always find us at securityforum.org. And that's also where you can explore our catalog of past video and podcast episodes and ISF's research and practical tools. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox and Tavia Gilbert. Music by Alexander Filipiak. Associate producer Katie Flood. Mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.